Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, we hear about European leaders trying to cope with a flood of migrants. An analyst discusses the latest Korean family reunion. An author stresses the importance of teaching children to understand kids with disabilities.
It really needs to be done in a fun but educational way.
And pop singer Justin Timberlake garners a special award. It's right here on The Voice of America. European leaders meeting in Brussels pledged to cooperate to control the flow of tens of thousands of migrants and refugees flooding the continent from South Asia, the Middle East, and Africa, even as cold weather begins to settle in over Europe's worst post-war humanitarian crisis. My colleague Victor Beatty is following this story and joins us here in the studio. Victor.
Hello, Susan. They're expanding reception capacities and border controls while improving the registration and screening process for those who survive the perilous journey. Jean-Claude Juncker is president of the European Commission. He's followed in his comments by the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, Antonio Guterres.
We will increase reception capacities to 100,000 places in Greece and in the Western Balkans. To safeguard Schengen, we also need to strengthen border management between Greece, the former ex-Yugoslavic Republic of Macedonia, Albania, and Serbia. In addition, we will deploy 400 police officers to Slovenia within a week.
I do believe that the decisions that were in consensus among those present in this meeting will give an important contribution to allow for the right bodies of the European Union to take the decisions that are needed to make sure that this situation that we always considered it was manageable will become effectively managed. First of all, to the benefit of the people in need, but also to guarantee the union and the stability of the European institutions.
Earlier, Slovenia's Prime Minister Miro Cerar warned inadequate EU action would soon result in the European Union and Europe as a whole falling apart. Slovenia has had to cope with tens of thousands of people who have arrived in the tiny Alpine country in just the past 10 days. Davy Sims is a former BBC journalist who spoke with me earlier from the resort village of Bled.
It will not stem the flow, not immediately, and certainly not within the next few weeks. But I think the important thing, or there are several important things that have come from this crisis meeting, and I think the most important thing is, first of all, the assistance that is going to be shown to the Balkan region, and also the improvement in communication. There has been very poor communication between some of the countries. And where I'm speaking from, Slovenia, and the next-door neighbor, Croatia, there have been an exchange of very harsh words over the past 7 to 10 days. I have also already noted this morning that there has been a note in one of the news agencies, the Slovenian news agency, that already communication has improved between the two countries, and the police in Croatia are alerting the police in Slovenia as to where they will be delivering the refugees and the migrants.
Slovenia's Prime Minister Miro Cerar warned that the EU itself is at stake as he arrived for those talks. Quote, if we don't deliver some immediate and concrete actions on the ground in the next few days and weeks, I believe the EU and Europe as a whole will start falling apart, unquote.
It sounds as if it's an exaggeration. You could counter it by saying the European Union has a much longer view than one immediate crisis. And there are several crises facing the European Union. But I think that Cerar is saying something that is important for his own electorate to hear. Angela Merkel, the premier from Germany, did not quite disagree and said this is one of the litmus tests that Europe is facing at the moment. So this is an important litmus test, or Europe falling apart. I think Merkel probably has the correct emphasis, but Cerar is very concerned. This is a very small country. Last night, since he spoke, 15,000 more refugees have arrived in the country. I think his electorate, his people here, need to hear strong, not harsh, but strong words as he goes into a negotiation.
Well, this meeting also produced a promise of some 400 border guards to Slovenia Is that going to help them control the situation?
Certainly, I think it's already been welcomed by the Slovenian news agencies. 400 border guards, 400 police coming in to help will certainly will help improve things. The information that we get, Victor, at the moment is the number of people who are arriving. What we're not quite clear on is the number of people who are leaving, because this is a transit area. The migrants and the refugees do not want to stay in Slovenia. They're bound for other places. Slovenia is a poor country. It has relatively high unemployment. It has difficulty in managing the refugees. And while I'm talking about 15,000 arriving overnight, or expected, estimated, there are other estimates, around 100,000 in the past 9 days, says one report, and 60,000 in the past 6 days, says another report. But we don't know how quickly they are leaving the country. They're being processed, certainly. They're not staying here. The border guards will help to get people through the country from where they are coming from, which is the southern Balkans, through Croatia, then on through Slovenia and into Austria.
Davy Sims says temperatures are falling across the region, but that hasn't diminished the numbers of those fleeing poverty, persecution, and war. He says those who left in early summer embark on a journey that takes months and are only now arriving just at the beginning of the winter season.
Thank you, Victor.
All right, Susan.
Time for a look at what's going on the web today. And joining me with the details is social media reporter Olin Akisholu. Welcome, Olin.
Thank you, Susan. Well, there's a little bit of reaction on social media right now. Earlier this morning, Slovenia was actually trending on Facebook because of the Prime Minister's remarks saying that the European Union will fall apart if no plan to address the migrants is determined. Last week, when Slovenia requested police assistance, a lot of people seemed sympathetic to the country's problems in their tweets. There are also some drone photos taken a couple hours ago showing a massive column of refugees on the move in Slovenia. These photos are getting a lot of attention. Lots of news organizations are tweeting them out.
What else is trending?
Well, one of the top trends on Twitter right now is hashtag earthquake, and along with it, the word Richter. Earlier this morning, an earthquake struck in Pakistan, and it was reportedly felt throughout South Asia. The U.S. Geological Survey recorded it at a magnitude 7.5. People on social media are comparing it to an earthquake that occurred 10 years ago in October 2005. A lot of Twitter users are sharing pictures of the destruction. A lot show cracks that formed in buildings. Some others I found show landslides people say were caused by the earthquake. I actually saw one photo of a car that had busted through the glass at a dealership in Pakistan.
Any numbers so far on this?
You know, there's a lot of numbers being sent around social media. The Associated Press so far reported 12 dead and more than 100 wounded, but there are a lot of other numbers going around, and because the story is still breaking and aftershocks are still likely to occur, it seems pretty likely that we won't get a good picture of the numbers of casualties anytime soon. It's pretty common in big events like this that have a lot of social media attention for misinformation to get spread around quite a bit.
Well, thanks a lot, Olin.
You bet, Susan.
This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
British researchers say they've come up with a new blood test that could help doctors provide cancer patients with the most appropriate treatment for their particular form of the disease. By running these new blood tests at times throughout a patient's treatment, medical professionals will be able to quickly and easily monitor the cancer's progress to see if the selected therapy is working or if a new plan should be devised. They say that their new blood test filters out a tumor's DNA from a patient's blood, so the tumor's genetic makeup can be analyzed and doctors can tailor treatments to the cancer cells. The researchers say that since tumors and their genetic makeup are unique and evolve, doctors need to understand their characteristics and changes so that they can develop the best treatment possible for their patients. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
A second short and emotional reunion of family members separated by the Korean War ended today at the North Korean resort of Mount Kumgang. A total of 90 families of about 250 South Koreans took part in the session. The first group of 96 South Koreans bade farewell after reuniting with relatives, some of whom they haven't seen in more than 60 years. The family reunions are the first since February of 2014 and are the result of an agreement between the Koreas reached last August on diffusing tensions. Korean analyst Malcolm Cook, a senior fellow at the Singapore-based Institute for Southeast Asian Studies, notes Pyongyang is in full control when these reunions occur.
North Korea chooses when and how the family reunions happen, and I think the North Korean regime, including under Kim Jong-un, see it as a kind of olive branch. So they, things like missile launches and threats of military actions against the South are counterbalanced over time with these offers of either summits between the two leaders or family reunions. So it's part of the overall management of by North Korea of the inter-Korean relationship.
The reunion is considered a rare event.
Yeah, it's certainly, I think it's only the second or third time in there. First time in quite a while, when Lee Moon-byak was in power, the previous president, the North Korean regime under Kim Jong-il refused to have any of those types of meeting, largely because they didn't see any interest in offering, as I say, olive branch or positive incentives. Park Geun-hye, the new president or present president in South Korea, has taken a softer or more moderate approach to relations with the North, and I think these family reunions are a sign of recognition of that in the North.
Will there be further efforts to bring the two Koreas together on some level?
Even though, as noted in the media, there's no agreement on if or when the next family reunions would take place, the fact that there's a very long waiting list means that North Korea can still play this kind of card as many times as it wants. First question is, it's really North Korea's decision whether to have them or not and what messages the North Korea wants to send to the South. So I would bet they would still use it into the future, especially maybe after they take more threatening actions as they regularly do, probably before we see another kind of thawing of the relationship and families being reunited. We should expect kind of more threatening actions by the North.
Might the North expand and hold more regularly these family reunions?
It all depends on, which we don't have a very good read on, what types of messages the North wants to send to the South and what it sees it can gain, both in its relations with the South and in international image of North Korea. So I think it would be wrong for people to see the North Korea's regime's very occasional permission for family reunions to be anything genuine. I'm sure it has to do with what political messages they want to send.
Coming up on International Edition, helping kids understand challenge kids, and Hometown Music Boy makes it big, very big. Children so often don't understand other children with disabilities. It can leave them frightened and even lead to bullying. Anya Dameron, author of the book Super Kids, has some suggestions on how to communicate to young ones about those with disabilities. And she joins us on the line. Hi, Anya.
Hi.
Hi. What can parents, and for that matter anyone dealing with children, do to help with this problem?
Well, I think that teaching your children about disabilities can be a huge challenge. It needs to be done in a way that the children can comprehend and doesn't feel awkward. It really needs to be done in a fun but educational way. That's why we created this book. We were trying to make it easier to talk about disabilities because we as parents, teachers, uncles, grandmas, it's very hard to talk about this with kids. It's like an awkward moment. And trying to make it normal, I think it's the best. Trying to teach them that we're not the same. Everyone is unique, that we all have differences, that we all have weaknesses. And pointing them to what's positive about everyone else, I think it's the best way.
Could you give us a tip on one way to help accomplish this?
I think that we could start by showing the kids all the things that disability children or people do that we don't. All the things they can do, the positive things that they develop, that they learn to be able to be around us. Like, for example, a girl that can speak with her hands or a boy that can read with his hands. Stuff like that can make them curious and can change the way they see disability people.
And what age should you start talking to your children about other children with disabilities?
I think that you can start, like, since they're very little, like, we just made a picture book about it. From 3 years old, you can start reading it to them, and the sooner the better, because then it's normal for them to talk about that.
Okay, well, thank you very much for speaking with us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
This is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Pop singer Justin Timberlake has garnered a special award. VOA's Jim Stevenson has this report.
Justin Timberlake's music doesn't bring Memphis, Tennessee exactly to mind. Said all I want from you is to see you tomorrow. And every tomorrow, maybe you let me borrow your heart. But Memphis is his hometown. He was inducted into the Memphis Music Hall of Fame.
I'm serious. This is the coolest thing that's ever happened to me. The Grammys are political. The Emmys are political. Memphis is not political. And don't get me started on Hollywood.
Timberlake's 20-minute speech served as a tribute to the city that is home to Beale Street, Stax Records, and is an epicenter of the blues and soul.
I felt like it was sort of unwarranted when I first looked at the list of my fellow inductees. But I've also never been one to turn down a reason to come home and spend time in the city that I grew up in and that holds such a special place in my heart. I also don't turn down free awards, so this all worked out.
Memphis is known for great R&B and soul artists like Sam and Dave. Otis Redding.
Sitting in the morning sun. I'll be sitting when the evening comes.
And Al Green.
It's all in a day's work.
Justin Timberlake performed covers of those artists' songs while at the city's Cannon Center for a crowd of about 2,000.
I've been all over the world 13 times. But London ain't got no Gus's fried chicken.
You know what I'm saying? Paris may rendezvous, but they ain't got no rendezvous. Egypt has the pyramids. They don't have a Bass Pro pyramid.
It won't be the last musical award for Timberlake, but likely will remain one of the most special for him. In Washington, I'm Jim Stevenson.
Zoom around and find your dreams come true with me. Spend all your time and your money just to find out that my love was free. So don't act like it's a bad thing to fall in love.
We would like to invite you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at @VOA_IE. Or if you would like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner, then scroll down to International Edition. And there's a little calendar there, and you can go back to any show we've had in the past. Thanks for joining us here for International Edition.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States remains concerned about the arrest of Venezuelan opposition leader Manuel Rosales. Mr. Rosales was detained by authorities October 15th when he returned to Venezuela after 6 years in self-imposed exile. A judge has reportedly ordered that Mr. Morales remain in jail until a verdict is reached in a trial scheduled to start November 12th. Mr. Rosales ran against former President Hugo Chavez in the 2006 presidential election. He left the country amid allegations of corruption, which he claims were politically motivated. Mr. Rosales returned to Venezuela to be present for the country's December 6th parliamentary elections. The arrest of Mr. Rosales follows the detention of several opposition leaders and reinforces a pattern of criminalizing political dissent by the Venezuelan government. Among those politicians jailed is Leopoldo Lopez, who was sentenced in September to nearly 14 years in prison on charges of having incited people to violence using subliminal messages. The case was called a travesty of justice by Human Rights Watch, which said the Venezuelan prosecution never presented basic evidence of a crime. Speaking to the press about Mr. Rosales' arrest, U.S. State Department Deputy Spokesperson Mark Toner called on the Venezuelan government to respect due process for Rosales and all others imprisoned on politically motivated charges. The Venezuelan government has an obligation, he said, to respect the human rights and fundamental freedoms guaranteed by international law. Deputy Spokesperson Toner noted that as a longtime party to the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, Venezuela is required to promptly inform all persons detained of the reasons and any charges against them, and to promptly bring anyone detained on criminal charges before a judge, and to either release them or guarantee them a fair and public trial before an independent and impartial tribunal. Consistent with the values and the spirit of the Inter-American Democratic Charter, we call upon the government of Venezuela to provide Rosales and others in political opposition with the legal protections and due process to which they are entitled.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.